Well, it's been a long week. We have fought off tick bites, cried over UGA's big loss, and took a trip to the High Museum. So, as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people here to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
For too long, women have not been heard or believed if they dared to speak their truth to the power of those men. But their time is up.
You didn't gasp.
That's because I don't understand what's happening.
We just lost our sugar daddy.
And Bitcoin is the only cryptocurrency I trust with my kids' college fund.
That's smart investing.
That's bat crazy.
Joining us in the break room are Amber Scott, executive director of the nonprofit Leap Year. Good morning, Amber.
Morning.
Sam Burnham, curator of the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia. Morning, Sam.
Good morning.
Natalie Pavelski is with us, vice president of Carter Communications. Morning, Natalie.
Communications, I gotta correct you, the boss will kill me.
Okay, thank you much. We'll take care of that. And with me in the Macon studio is Charles Richardson, opinion page editor for The Telegraph in Macon. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning.
So welcome, everybody. If you didn't watch the Golden Globes, you've probably still heard all or part of Oprah Winfrey's monologue.
So I want tonight to express gratitude to all the women who have endured years of abuse and assault because they, like my mother, had children to feed and bills to pay and dreams to pursue.
That's from Oprah's acceptance speech for the Cecil B. DeMille Award on Sunday. Afterwards, people freaked out on Twitter calling for her to run for president in 2020. And close associates of Oprah really fed those speculations. Not everyone agreed this was a good idea. So would Oprah Winfrey make a good president, Amber?
You know, I love Oprah. I do. I think she's brilliant and talented and generous. But no, this has to stop. Okay, we can't have any more celebrity, you know, talk show presidents. I feel like it's not asking for too much to have an experienced public servant who's dedicated to public service and knows what that job really requires in that position.
Charles?
I
just have one question. Did Oprah sleep in a Holiday Inn last night?
That was good. It took me a minute, but that was good.
I'm not sure that it's false confidence, at least with regard to getting elected president, Sam? I mean, she could do it.
Oh, in this climate, in this country, the cult of celebrity that we have, absolutely. Now, is it wise? No.
Oh.
I mean, people give one speech or they do one thing, whether it's Oprah or Joe the plumber, and all of a sudden everybody's like, you need to run for Congress. You need to be the president.
That's right.
Is that really you want negotiating Iran deals and nuclear weapons in Korea just because they gave one good speech?
Yeah, it's as if celebrity is the only currency that matters these days, and that really is dangerous. And it's not just politics. You know, people, scientists are being sort of devalued. Journalism isn't what it used to be. You know, expertise matters. And I don't think the presidency of the United States is an appropriate job for a newbie.
No.
And I like Oprah,
this is brain surgery. Being president of the United States is brain surgery. You have a very dangerous world out there with very dangerous people and very smart people. And you have to put your best out there. I think we're seeing something, seeing what happens when you don't. Things go break in the night. And just because you give one speech does not mean that you can be president of the United States.
That's not enough to qualify.
Now, wait a minute. But, you know,
I want a real brain surgeon if they're going to cut into my head, please.
Well, and, you know, we are long overdue for a female president, and we're long overdue for a woman of color to be president.
And she is a real self-made zillionaire, unlike certain people.
Right, true. She at least, you know. But we have tons of qualified women of color who, you know, have experience in this space. Like Kamala Harris, I would love to see her run, or Tammy Duckworth, or Maxine Waters. But not just because you gave a great speech and you're brilliant doesn't mean that you should be president.
I can give a great speech, but I cannot be president of the United States.
Charles, I would take you above many other...
above certain current occupants?
Right. But I have one thing that the others don't have. I know what I can't do.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
It is really scary to think that...
But I cannot do that.
Mm-hmm. She could win, though. That's the scary thing
yeah.
in this climate.
Yeah.
Oh, she could win.
That's where we're at.
you know, she I,
and
I'll
she
give,
wouldn't
I'll,
get in
let
Twitter
me describe
wars.
A scenario.
Go ahead.
When Oprah came to Macon, Georgia, on a cold night, there were people standing outside of the 1842 Inn, looking in a glass window, just trying to get a peek of her. And these were white people looking in to get a peek at this black woman at night, on a cold night, in their furs, just trying to get a peek. And they followed her around town like she was a goddess, which she is
she
in
is,
her
she
realm.
Is.
There is no doubt about that. But
stay in your
president,
realm.
Yeah, stay in your
stay
realm.
Stay in your lane.
Exactly.
Oh, I wish
All
somebody
right,
else had listened
on.
To that.
The most famous former Google employee in the world is suing his former employer. James Damore was an engineer at Google when he sent a memo arguing against Google's pro-diversity policies. Google fired him, and now he's suing the company for discrimination against conservatives and white men. What say you, Sam?
I say he has grounds because of the path that's been laid before him. You can sue anybody for anything in this country, and people do. At what point do we stop and say, hey, look, no, quit suing people, take responsibility for what you did. Now, I come down where I agreed with James on some things and on others not so much, but whether he should be suing for discrimination, go on with your life, man. You're a talented guy. Get a job. Provide for yourself or your family, whatever. Just let this go.
It is interesting, not to get all legal analysis on it, given that I merely went to Law and Order U. but as I understand it, U.S. Anti-discrimination law does protect against discrimination on the basis of race or sex, but not on the basis of political ideology. But maybe should it, Natalie?
I don't know. I mean, let's say I went to work for Breitbart or Fox News, and then I start circulating memos about how clueless right-wing men are. I mean, if I get myself fired, should I be able to sue? No, I'm being an idiot. I know where I'm working. I mean, part of this is taking responsibility for yourself and being an adult. The problem with what Damore did, I mean, some of his points were probably well taken. Some of them weren't well taken, like Sam indicated. But the problem was he was circulating a memo that kind of stereotyped women in a way that called their competence into question.
Genetically.
So, yeah. And I mean, how could any manager assign any woman to a team he's on at that point?
Yeah. And, you know, so first of all, I found his whole argument in the suit really ridiculous. And I think I don't really understand how you could rationalize suing for discrimination when the organization is still predominantly male and still predominantly white, right?
Overwhelmingly, though,
so,
not just
you know,
even close.
Personally, I don't even understand that line of logic around discrimination. But then secondly, I think it's really important not to conflate conservative ideas with sexist and racist ideas, right? Mm. There are lots of conservatives who believe in equal opportunity and access for everybody, which is essentially what Google's diversity initiative was saying, right? It's not saying we don't want white men here. It's saying we want to increase diversity and have this be a welcoming place where we can other people have access to opportunities here, right? So I think it's important that that's not a conservative thought. Like the things that he's saying about biological gender differences and, you know, like a lot of that stuff was just purely sexist and racist.
And to your point, Adam, there is no law in the United States that says a company can't fire you for being stupid. It's just that if I were to do what he did, my company would fire me because I was not being discriminated against, but because I was being stupid. And that's just bottom line.
Give the employers the right to run their companies.
All right. Last, let's try to sneak in one more topic before we go to our break. Life can be expensive in innumerable ways, especially for college students and recent grads. So maybe, hey, what do? Find a sugar daddy.
Great, because I have some dental work I've been putting off.
I could use some new school clothes. I have an alarming amount of credit card debt that I've been hiding from the family.
Apparently, scores of U.S. college students are entering into intimate relationships with older, wealthier people as a means of paying off their debt. SeekingArrangements.com, which is exactly what it sounds like, says Georgia State University has the eighth highest number of students in the country using their service. Amber, mutually beneficial relationship or something much darker?
So, I mean, albeit I think this is a weird example of it, it is an example of just how ridiculous the cost of higher education has gotten. I mean, I just want to put that out there. There's an industry surrounding this now because college has gotten so expensive. But I feel like if everyone's a consenting adult, you know, I don't see a problem with it. You know, if everyone's on board with it, it works out. Okay. As long as everyone's consenting and everyone's an adult.
But where's the red light district there?
It's a virtual red light district.
Right. We meet on the internet, and how do we exchange a Bitcoin, or how do we do that?
So are you saying, Charles, that this is prostitution by any other name?
Well, it's you know, you can stretch that definition. You know, when you take somebody out on a date, what are your expectations? What are you paying in return? Most times, I think these sugar daddies are called mom and dad. You know, mom and dad pay a ridiculous amount for our college educations. And then now the rule is, now after I graduate with this very expensive degree, I come home and live with mom and dad. Mm. You know, we don't go out in the world like we used to. We come home and live with mom and dad and eat out of their refrigerator.
I want a privileged female opinion on this topic. So, Natalie, do you have a closing thought in terms of
do I have to check my privilege? Look, I think it's really funny how seeking arrangements goes to great lengths in interviews and on the website to point out that no one is allowed to use the site to bargain over sex for money, and they'd be shocked if anyone was doing it here. But then it also makes sure to say that, oh, we can't control what happens between consenting adults.
Right.
I mean, right. I think this is, you know, it's a little skeevy to me. You don't know who you're going to meet through a service
Indeed. And that's where we'll have to leave that topic for now. It's Friday. We're in the break room. Coming up, we recover from a Northern Georgia football disappointment, and cassettes somehow making a comeback. So dust off your old Walkmen. That's next from On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea, in for Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. We're having coffee and conversation in the break room, as we do each Friday, talking about the week's news. My guests are Charles Richardson, opinion page editor for The Telegraph in Macon; Amber Scott, executive director of the nonprofit Leap Year; Sam Burnham, curator of the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia; and Natalie Pavelski, vice president of Cater Communications. It was a sad, sad night for the Georgia Bulldogs.
But in overtime, we didn't finish when we had to, and Alabama did. And to give them credit, but I think everybody can see that Georgia's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I'm very proud of this team and this university, and we're not going anywhere.
That was UGA football coach Kirby Smart talking to press after their big loss at the College Football National Championship Monday night. And you can tell that you're listening to public radio because we actually had to explain all of that. Sam, which stage of grief are you in?
I think I'm at the point that I'm ready to just be done talking about it.
No, you're not.
My sugar daddy in college was the football team. That's how I paid for college.
Oh, yeah.
At working on staff with the team. My little brother's a college football coach. You know, coming from an experienced voice on college football, Georgia's coming back. They're going to be fine. They have a great base built. Kirby Smart has really energized the program. They've got plenty of good recruits coming in that we've seen in the from National Signing Day. That was a tough loss, and with, you know, overtime 41-yard touchdown pass to destroy the entire season. But but they're coming back.
They'll Sam, back. It wasn't that bad.
It was really not that bad.
I was watching with my poor 17-year-old. We're finally going to win the national championship, son. And he just, went straight to bed. He was done.
Sam, it really wasn't that bad, because think about it. Alabama had the chance to win in regulation. They missed two chip shot field goals.
Oh, yeah.
They did.
So, yep. And what Kirby Smart has done at 2 years at Georgia is absolutely phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And you're right. They're set up for a future. They're not going anywhere. They're going to be around. If Nick Saban hadn't pulled a surprise coin out of his hat, putting in a new quarterback at the second half that Georgia could not prepare for because they hadn't seen him.
Right.
But what about
that? That was the masterstroke there.
But, I, you know, guys, I'm beginning to think there's an Atlanta curse. you know, like the curse of the Bambino, except it's maybe some other curse. Because we've got the Bulldogs this year. Last year's Super Bowl, you know, that was not exactly a lovely event either. All those times the Braves made it to the World Series but didn't win except once. The Hawks collapsed the other year. I think there's a curse.
Natalie, it's not that bad. Pull yourself up, Natalie. Pull yourself up. Don't think that way. There's no gloom hanging over the 285 corridor.
I am not a sports fan. I don't know about these things. So tell me if I'm being naive, Amber. But it just kind of seems like, you know, there's a lot of college football teams in this country, and everyone's all just like, oh, they're going to recover from this, or what went wrong with this football team? They made it to the freaking national championship game.
It is like the atmosphere in the room is a little down. You know?
And I have to say the Rose Bowl was amazing. Wasn't that an amazing game to watch?
Yeah. Sony Michel's last run in the Rose Bowl was unbelievable. When he broke it free, I ran across the room myself, and I don't think I've moved that fast in many years.
Yeah, did you hurt yourself?
I think I pulled my pancreas.
All right, Sam, we'll grant your wish, and we'll be done talking about it. moving on to another topic, this is the break room here on Second Thought. We're talking about the week's news, and I think it's probably fair for all of us to consider the question of whether we are too attached to our electronics.
You guys, you don't have to do this. You don't have to do this. We can still just play Counter-Strike and forget everything. Oh my God, there's no Wi-Fi. We can use my phone to make a hotspot. We can still play Counter-Strike. It'll be sweet. You guys, come on, please.
Okay. So two big Apple shareholders have asked the company to research the effect that the iPhone has on kids, children. Steve Jobs famously didn't allow his own kids to use smartphones. Question before us is, should manufacturers be responsible for the potential psychological, neurological, I don't know, vision damage that smartphones might be doing to kids' brains and bodies? What do you think, Amber?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the same way that fast food companies and children's cartoons have a responsibility to understand the effect that their product has on children, so do technology companies, especially since they're so ubiquitous now. And everywhere you go, children have these, like, things, these rectangles in their hands, right? And just constantly staring at it. I have to admit, so I've been watching Black Mirror a lot. I don't know if I've been watching that, but it's a fantastic show. And it's talking about, you know, this dystopian societies where technology has kind of taken over in these terrible ways. And it's pretty horrifying. Like, I feel bad when I have children. They're going to be raised like Amish at this point. Because I really am worried about, you know, where is this going to go? Where is this leading to?
Yeah, because I have a five-year-old. And when my daughter works the iPhone better than my husband does, mm-hmm. I don't know whether to be proud or horrified,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I think this is part of the corporate social responsibility, really. I mean, absolutely, parents have the responsibility to monitor their kids' use of technology. Mm-hmm. But as Amber said, I mean, screens are everywhere. So these shareholders suggested things like Apple incorporating a range of age-appropriate controls that parents can use, doing some research. I think that's sensible, and I think that's part of their corporate social responsibility.
I think if they take the social responsibility, like Natalie just said, adding some safeguards in there where parents can turn this or that off and on. But largely, I still think it's going to come down on the side of the parents. It's your device. Kid didn't go pay $900 for an iPhone. So if you're the one that bought it, you're the one paying for the data package on it, then you also need to take responsibility for your child and put some limits on it yourself. Don't just rely on Apple to keep a cell phone out of your kid's hand.
Charles, are you happy or regretful that you raised your kids not in the age of smartphones and tablets?
Well, I'm pretty happy. Not that they haven't caught up, but I'm sort of with Sam. It's really up to the parents. Apple already, you know, I have an iPhone. It has a feature on it now that you can enable where it won't give you notifications while you're driving. It'll send a notification to whoever sent you the notification that I'm driving now. I'll call you when I'm finished, when I'm done. But you have to enable that. There was a report out just this week about distracted driving, how traffic deaths are up 12% in Georgia, and they're talking about this being from distracted driving, people looking at their iPhones or whatever smartphone they have instead of looking at the road. Common sense isn't so common. But the parents are the ones that really have control of these devices. And like an earlier comment, these young kids know how to work them better than I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I think parents, you know, obviously the parents have the largest role in this, but I really do think that companies have a responsibility if they're creating this product. Extensive studies have shown how phones and social media are increasing young kids' stress and anxiety and bullying. And so at what point, and I think we're at that point, companies have to actually start creating campaigns around, you know, kids probably shouldn't have phones in front of them for 8 hours a day, right? And if you're going to buy this product, use it responsibly. The same way, you know, beer
like
companies,
cigarettes,
you know, fast food, all of these companies, they're starting to have to acknowledge, like, you can't just do this, you know, 12 hours a day, right?
But we don't know. I mean, and this is, as a parent of very young children myself, what I really want is just more research, because part of me thinks that when I see my older son, who's three, the baby is still a little too young for it. When I see the three-year-old, you know, marvelously operating his iPad, I think, you know, this is probably, like, of all of the skills he could be developing right now, one of arguably even the most relevant skill to the rest of his life, and I feel pretty good about it. On the other hand, it may be the case that it's destroying his brain, and we don't know. There needs to be research. Right. There needs to be research.
That's a pretty horrifying spectrum.
It is.
Yeah. Right, but Star Trek, we're here. We're here. We're talking to our computers now. You know.
Let's try to whip through a couple more topics here. Georgia is in a Supreme Court battle with Florida. The Sunshine State says that Georgia is taking too much of the water that Florida needs. This is one of these stories that's been bubbling for a long time, and I keep meaning to kind of read into it and come up with an opinion, and I just never get around to it. Does anybody feel like they have a firm grasp on which state is in the wrong here?
Well, you look at Atlanta's growth over the last 30 years of this case, and you'd have to say that Atlanta is growing exponentially, and that would not have happened without being able to turn on the faucet.
Mm. Yeah, but at the same time, okay, check this out. The U.S. Geological Survey monitors water use in states across the country. And from 1980 to 2010, while Georgia's population increased 75%, water use actually declined by 30%. Can you tell I'm a former environment reporter? Okay, so part of this is because of changes in electric plants. Some electric plants went offline. Others switched from coal to natural gas. But also, a lot of us conserve whether we like it or not. You know, low-flow toilets were put into federal law. Things like the Voluntary Energy Star program mean that we can wash dishes and clothes using a lot less water.
Yeah, but it's, you know, and I like to consider myself an environmentalist, but it's actually really hard, especially in Georgia, to do that. So we live in a townhouse complex, right? And they aggregate our water bill. So we actually don't know how much our unit uses, which makes it really difficult to try to reduce your consumption if you don't even know how much you're consuming.
Incentive for you. You can, like, do slip and slide and bubble baths all day. Who knows?
I know I have neighbors who are taking half an hour showers, and I'm paying for it.
Look, one thing that I do want to bring up, being from not Atlanta, there was a lot of talk a few years ago, and I can foresee it coming back, about interbasin water transfer, where Atlanta wanting to take water from Lake Altoona, which is water that will provide Alabama, Rome, Cartersville, Acworth with water that Atlanta is now beginning to feel like they're entitled to. And as these water wars continue, you're going to see other areas pop up in the Alabama and North Georgia area who say Atlanta is using too much water. I am in a complete agreement with that. And while we're trying to bring in Amazon and 50,000 more jobs, where do you get the water?
And of course, this has to be at least as much about agricultural water uses as it is about.
Absolutely. That's our number one industry. And if we begin to starve it from water to provide for a city that's popping up and can't control its growth or its water resources, that's going to cause a big problem for our state.
All right. Listeners, do you have a passion for cassette tapes?
Take those headphones off. That's mine. Those belong in Impound, that tape, and that player is mine! Hooked on a Feeling, Blue Swede, 1973, that song belongs to me!
a clip from Guardians of the Galaxy where an old-fashioned mixtape plays a rather significant role in the plot. Sales of cassette tapes rose 35% in 2017. Is this just about nostalgia, perhaps inspired by Guardians of the Galaxy? Or do cassettes deserve a comeback the way that I think most people accept vinyl sort of deserved a comeback? What do you think, Amber?
No, I mean, I don't understand why anyone... I grew up in the time of Walkmans, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you're, like, putting the tape recorder up to the radio because there wasn't Pandora back then, right? So if you want to, like, listen to a new song, you had to, like, tape record it and put it in your Walkman. And no, like, why would anyone go back to those days? I mean, at least with vinyl, the sound quality is better, right? So I can get that. But, like, cassette tapes are terrible.
And have always been terrible.
Yeah.
I'm probably the only one here that can go back to old four tracks that are three times the width of a cassette tape.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good sound quality-wise, but then you went to the eight tracks, then you went to the cassettes, and the sound quality degraded all the way down the track. On my iPhone, I've got over 3,000 songs. I can't do that with a cassette. Why would I want to?
Yeah, why would you want to?
The tapes stretch and they break and they melt.
Yeah.
I mean, where are these people even finding a working cassette player to listen to these things on?
I still have some cassettes. I haven't listened to any in a long time. My wife says I'm a pack rat. So, but with that, Charles brought up a good one. I think the cassette tape for me was a jump in technology, to date myself a little bit, from the old crunk crunk that you'd get in the middle of a song on the 8-track.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going back to cassettes.
No, and the other thing, if anybody has ever had a cassette, they also know what it was like when the tape got wrapped around the wheel and you had to untangle it.
Yeah. With a pencil eraser.
That's right. And now did anybody have fun doing that? Yeah.
There's also how they would sometimes get stuck in your car stereo. And I remember that I was there physically incapable of listening to anything in my car other than Metallica's Master of Puppets for an entire year of high school.
That explains a lot.
Could have been worse. It was pretty good now that I recall it. All right, I want to try to hit one more topic in a minute that we have here, and it's pretty serious. According to the FBI, the violent crime rate is continuing to drop across the country. This is part of a decades-long trend. Violent crime peaked in the early 90s in the United States and has been dropping precipitously. However, violent crime is actually up somewhat dramatically in some cities, including ours, Charles. Our murder rate is, twice what it was this time last year?
Yes.
What's going on?
Well, first of all, you have to remember that police cannot really prevent violent crime. They can catch the perpetrators, and they can prevent it somewhat just by being visible. But otherwise, the numbers are what really... being visible, being out in the community, being able to make some contact with community sources, and the public has to say, hey, folks, we got a problem here. And that takes numbers of police more than being able to actually prevent arguments breaking out between mano-a-mano or domestic violence and that kind of thing.
And to clarify, when I was talking about the murder rate doubling, I was talking about Macon, the city where Charles and I are right now. I think violent crime continues to be on the decline in
other
Atlanta
places, yeah.
And other places. Why are we seeing such a disparate trend line from place to place, folks? Any theories up there in Atlanta?
Well, in Atlanta, we're having trouble keeping enough officers. We're below our authorized number of officers. We keep losing them because they don't get paid enough.
That's going to be a case a lot of places. We are losing in Rome a lot of firemen and policemen to Georgia Power, Coca-Cola, places that are offering good pay and benefits where they can take better care of their families. A lot of your smaller towns like Rome or Cartersville will lose public safety to Atlanta or Marietta or Gwinnett County because they can commute and still make the kind of money that they need to take care of themselves based on their standard of living where they live.
And the governor offered state patrol officers $48,000 coming out of the academy. Right. And the local folks can't match that.
Right. We'll have to leave it there, Natalie. I apologize. We're all out of time. That's Natalie Pavelski, Vice President of Cater Communications, who no doubt had a great point just then. Sam Burnham, curator of the blog All the Biscuits in Georgia. Charles Richardson, opinion page editor at The Telegraph in Macon. Amber Scott, executive director of the nonprofit Leap Year. Thanks, y'all. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thanks,
Adam.
Thank you.